we change over our lifetimes. So what worked 5 years ago may not be who you are today, and it's okay. Plan for periodically reassessing and figuring out where you should move to next.
Welcome back, gang. This is Future Proof, episode number 208, I believe. Bill Sheridan here. Thanks for joining us yet again. So glad you could join us again this week. Another great conversation for you. Think purpose, think why. Think about why you do what you do. That's where we're going this week. And we're going to get started down that path in just a minute. First, a reminder, this week's show made possible, as always, by our preferred providers. And we actually like to think of these folks as partners. These are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our profession, including this podcast. But these partners, by the way, they do way more than that. They're doing things that we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And help is really the key word here. They truly, truly do want to help. So please reach out to them, find out more about what they can do and how they can help you, because they can, right? You'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website, macpa.org. So my guest this week is Dr. Britt Andriotta. Let's get right to it. The name might sound familiar. She's been on this show before, talking about burnout and how employees can protect themselves and what employers should be doing to prevent it. Check out episode 163 for more on that. But she's back this week. Her most recent book is called Wired to Become: The Brain Science of Finding Your Purpose, Creating Meaningful Work, and Achieving Your Potential. So right away, I was intrigued because here at the MACPA, of course, we've been laser focused for a while now on the why behind accounting. Why CPAs choose this profession? What drives them? What inspires them? What's their passion behind this work? When it comes to our talent shortage, we at the MACPA, we firmly believe connecting students and young professionals to that drive, that passion, that's going to play a huge role in helping us overcome our pipeline issues. And we're not the only people who believe that, by the way. An article about all this in CPA Practice Advisor caught my eye recently. The article was titled, "Where Have All the Accountants Gone?" Written by Garrett Wagner. And here's what he says. And this is kind of a longish excerpt, but good stuff here. So bear with me. He writes, quote, "Change starts with realization. The future of accounting isn't a foregone conclusion of decline. It's a challenge waiting to be met with innovation and determination. We must combat the nothingness, the apathy and cynicism stemming from a we've always done it this way mentality. Our mission is to reshape the accounting profession's public image and the nature of our work. The answer isn't just in increasing paychecks either. We need to scrutinize and restructure how the accounting industry operates. What's needed is a paradigm shift from a culture obsessed with billable hours to one that values fulfilling professional experiences. This is where the silver lining emerges. The industry's pivot toward roles in consulting, advisory, and analysis isn't just a change in job titles. It's an opportunity to inject passion and purpose into our work. Why not transform traditional accounting firms into dynamic, client-focused consultancies? Let's redefine the role of accountants, not just as tax experts, but as pivotal players in shaping our clients' futures. We should inspire the next generation to see accounting not as a detour, but as a direct route toward impactful, rewarding careers. It's about integrating the gratifying aspects of nonprofit work into our professional ethos. The story of the accounting profession need not mirror the never-ending story's battle against oblivion. By recentering on our core values and making our work engaging and meaningful, we can rewrite our narrative. One where hope overcomes apathy and the profession attracts individuals who are eager to make a real difference. In the end, it's about fostering hope and relentlessly pursuing it. Let's fight against the apathy threatening our field. Accounting is more than a job. It's a calling to effect positive change, one balanced ledger at a time, end quote. And again, that's from a recent CPA Practice Advisor article titled, Where Have All the Accountants Gone? I thought that was really good food for thought there. And considering all this, I was excited about having the opportunity to once again speak with Dr. Britt Andreatta to kind of tap into the mind of a scientist who has studied the research behind the importance of finding your purpose at work. And she outlines a lot of that research in her latest book, Wired to Become: The Brain Science of Finding Your Purpose, Creating Meaningful Work, and Achieving Your Potential, available, as they say, wherever fine books are sold. She and I talked recently about how our profession can benefit from a renewed focus on the purpose of our work, some of the myths that people believe about purpose, and what the actual truths are, and why so many of us have forgotten why we do what we do in the first place and how we can kind of rediscover that passion. So just a lot of really great stuff here this week. And given the current state of our profession, really important stuff too. I'm glad you're here for this one. This is my conversation with Dr. Britt Andreatta. Dr. Andreatta, thanks so much for joining me. And I want to start with this. This is just kind of by way of background, I guess, for the folks who might be listening to this show. The CPA profession has been struggling for a while now with some serious pipeline issues. Fewer students studying accounting, which means fewer graduates taking the exam, which means fewer CPAs, less talent for our firms and organizations, and a lot of folks that we work with are really starting to feel that talent pain right now. And there's been a ton of debates about possible solutions. How do we start to solve this? And a lot of those debates tend to fall on the kind of the regulatory side or compliance side of what CPAs need to do to become CPAs. But we spend a lot of time talking about what CPAs do and significantly less time, I guess, talking about why they do it. And so we're trying to help CPAs kind of reconnect with their purpose, why they became CPAs in the first place, and to share that meaning with students and potential new CPAs. And I guess that's kind of a long-winded way of asking my first question, which is really this. I mean, what are the personal benefits of someone kind of reconnecting with their why, their purpose, why they get up in the morning and do what they do, the meaning behind what they do? What's the benefit, I guess, all of that? Let's start individually wise, I guess.
Yeah, no, I have some thoughts. Please call me Britt, by the way, and it's lovely to be connecting with you and your listeners. So a couple things, you know, us as a species, humans are wired for purpose. In fact, we have neural signatures for when we are focusing on purpose and meaning in our life. And it's different than happiness. So happiness is kind of that focus on immediate gratification, a fleeting sense of pleasure or joy, something that you might get from eating a good piece of chocolate cake or watching a game, or I play pickleball, getting that smash across the net, right. That kind of thing, right? Where purpose and meaning is much more long-term, and it gives a deeper sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. But the key to purpose and meaning is it's always transcendent. It focuses on the good of others. You're doing something to be service to others. You're doing something for the good of others, where happiness is really self-focused. That chocolate cake tastes good to me. We need both. We really need both in balance in our lives. And when we have them, we get all kinds of amazing benefits. Purpose in particular, having a sense of purpose in your life, having a sense of meaning in your life, brings all kinds of neural protection. We see anxiety and depression go down. Age-related cognitive decline goes down. There's physical benefits, lower risk of heart attack and stroke and things like that, more likely to engage in self-care behaviors. Mm-hmm. We also see other benefits in terms of people with a sense of purpose in their life when they face hard things, perceive them as less hard than people who don't. So it can really give us that a lot of protections and benefits to us physically and emotionally. And for organizations, when your people feel like they're living their purpose at work, there's huge benefits to the organization. So one of the things that I would say to CPA firms in general is becoming a purpose-driven organization, talking about your vision and purpose, the why of what you do, is really important. And while some folks might think it's just about numbers, those numbers are in service of something else, right? It's in making sure that the product or the company is serving a community in some way. I also think it's important to understand that this younger generation, millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, care very much about social equality issues and the environment. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually looking to work for companies that are purpose-driven, care about those issues and not just lip service to them. They want a more flexible environment. So there's a bit of a mix here in terms of yes, purpose and meaning matter. And also we're seeing a shift in what generations care about at work. And so I think some of the old ways of working need to really be rethought, and we need to get more flexible and continue to build on the flexibility we added during the pandemic. For many industries, it shook things up in a good way. You know, my mom was an accountant. So when I think about things that accounting firms can do to recruit and retain, particularly the younger generation, I think it's, you know, really focusing on that why. You know, I think sometimes people can perceive it around just a bunch of number crunching, right? But when I think about what was meaningful to her, like accuracy was really important to her. She felt like it was about truth, you know, and making sure that we're telling the truth, that she really wanted to empower leaders to make good decisions. And they could only make good decisions if they had accurate information. I know she really cared about measuring progress and success, that you can use these as markers to make sure the organization is moving in the right way or accomplishing the things it says it wants to. The whole element of integrity, right? That when your records align and everything is as it's supposed to be, there's incredible integrity there. So I think part of it is looking at the profession and how you talk about it with more of this language around purpose and meaning, because this is the language that the younger generation is speaking. And if the experienced professionals don't make that translation, it may not be easy for the younger generation to see it, to see what the possibilities are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the conversations that are going on right now that I'd never thought that I'd live to see, you know, should we adopt a 4-day work week? Or, you know, I mean, those types of things are real, and people are taking them seriously because of a lot of the things that you mentioned. And so it's really interesting times that we're living in. Fantastic book, by the way, and congratulations on it. And
Thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit about how we find that or rediscover that purpose. I mean, we all have it in some way, shape, or form. I think a lot of us spend most of our careers having forgotten, you know, why I became a communications person, or, you know, whatever the case may be, that purpose is kind of long forgotten. How do we, any thoughts on how we can reconnect with the idea of whether or not our work or our careers is meaningful in a way that's important to us?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's part of why I wrote the book now, is that the pandemic did change us. We are forever changed. One, because we all faced our mortality, and the loss of life was great. Most people know at least one person who died of COVID, and some folks know many people who died. So if you've ever known a cancer survivor, you know, being faced with your mortality makes you rethink your priorities and question your values. And then we had that. It was all happening to us globally and simultaneously, so you couldn't escape this experience. And then we had a lot of time to sit and think. More time than we've had to sit and think in a very long time. And so it created this kind of values clarification experience that the whole globe went through at the same time. And it's part of what drove the Great Resignation, right? People were like, I don't know if I'm in the right place anymore. I'm going to change jobs. I'm going to change careers. It was exacerbated by burnout. People worked more during the pandemic. Most people worked more during the pandemic than they did before. And so burnout tends to leech away joy from things that used to make you feel good, like your coworkers or the projects you worked on. So I think a lot of what was happening is people were actually feeling burnout, but thinking that it also meant that it was time to make a job change. So it is what it is. It impacted people and it drove the great resignation. And so burnout is another indication that, you know, like healthcare workers, these are incredibly passionate people that had a real sense of purpose in their life and they chose a career that was really meaningful. But when you do something too much and too intensely, you can ruin it, right? You can burn out. And this is why we've seen healthcare workers and teachers leave in droves, is that there's a bit of a balance thing that you have to find. You can have too much purpose and meaning and then overwork. And of course, healthcare workers didn't have a choice, but collectively as a society, that pandemic burned out most of our healthcare workforce. In terms of finding it, you know, a lot of it is about reflection. I built the book with a lot of journaling exercises in it. And I also share a lot of research. So I kind of like, here's what one group of researchers think. What do you think? How does this resonate for you? And then I have another section on models of meaningful work. And I ask people, okay, try it on. How do these help you think about jobs you've loved in the past and a job you might want in the future? So I give people a lot of opportunities to kind of assess and reflect using different tools. And I think that's an important way to explore for yourself, is to engage in something, whether you go to a workshop or you read a book, get together with a few friends with a bottle of wine and just talk about it. But I think reflecting and asking yourself the questions is part of how you figure it out. And one thing I want to share that was really interesting in the research is that we kind of have three levels of how we define meaning about work. There's meaning of work, which is kind of our overall perception of how we perceive work in general. Most of that was shaped by your family and how your parents talked about their jobs. And is this just a mean to, a, you know, an ends to a mean or means to an end? Did they talk about finding a place where you feel respected and that you thrive? So there's kind of attitudes we have about work. So it's meaning of work. Then there's meaning in work and how meaningful work is to you specifically. So if you enjoy certain fields, and like I love training and development, that's my space. I love educating others. So I get a lot of meaning in that type of work. But then the third category is really important, meaning at work, which is this job in this organization. Mm-hmm. So if you look at my career, I found my purpose early on, but I've had some crappy bosses that ruined it for me, and I needed to leave that company. I have worked for organizations where I loved the idea, but the way the leaders were conducting themselves, there was a lot of moral discomfort, and I needed to find another place. So I think kind of thinking about that in the layers too, is it really the field that you want to leave, or is it this particular boss or this particular organization that maybe isn't the best match for you now? Mm-hmm. And we change over our lifetimes. So what worked 5 years ago may not be who you are today, and it's okay. Plan for periodically reassessing and figuring out where you should move to next.
That's great. Great advice. I mean, that your notion about reflecting, especially with others, and asking questions and just, you know, in that course of rediscovering, kind of, it reminds me of, I'm looking over my bookshelf. I've got a book by the Heath brothers, Chip and Dan Heath, the Power of Moments, I believe it was, but they used as an example, they talk about the power of asking better questions.
Yeah.
And in specifically in finding your purpose in what you do. And they used as an example, a janitor in a hospital, I think.
Yep.
And they asked what, you know, and they just started asking the question, why, over and over, why do you do what you do? And the first answer might be, well, my boss tells me to, but you know, why is it important? Well, you know, it cleans the room and makes it a little bit better to be in. And well, why is that important? Well, it makes it, you know, and over the course of four or five whys, it kind of led this person to say, well, you know what, I do what I do because it makes the patient happier and healthier. And that's a pretty powerful why for somebody in that line of work. And I think it just kind of speaks to what you were talking about there, this notion of just starting a conversation based in questions with other people who do similar type of work. Who knows what you're going to uncover in the course of that conversation?
Yeah. And reflecting on what you just said, this is what really great leaders do. Great leaders talk about the why. They're sharing the customer stories. They're sharing the impact that they have in the world. And they make it easier for that janitor or that worker to see the connection. And so there's a lot that leaders can do actually to help folks on that journey. And then if you don't have leaders that do that for you, you can do it for yourself. And also managers can do a great job of being that kind of intermediary. So I love that idea. But getting to the heart of those questions really does matter.
Yeah.
And it makes us feel much more connected to what we're doing.
You've mentioned previously that there are paradoxes with purpose. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious, what do you mean by that? What are some common paradoxes when talking about our whys?
Yeah, I have a whole chapter dedicated to it. So meaning, having a meaningful life or purpose in your life has some paradoxes in it. So one of them is that it's deeply personal. You know, what's meaningful to you, Bill, is different than what's meaningful to me. And so while it's the paradox, though, is it's deeply personal, and yet ultimately it's shaped and controlled by others. Mm-hmm. Even what we're told is meaningful. Like, think about the young person who knew at a young age that they were really meant to be an artist. And their parents' response was, "You'll never make money at that. We're not paying for that. You can't study that in college." Right. Mm-hmm. How teachers told you if you were talented at something, if bosses said you were good at it. You know, many of us have kind of known our purpose and then got talked out of it by other people. So that's one of the paradoxes. We have to find our journey through that. Another paradox is the dangers of kind of boundary management. And there was many research articles that talk about, in quotes, the dark side of purpose and meaning, which is for folks who are super passionate about what they do, it then gets really hard for them to stop working and having a weekend, mm-hmm. having fulfilling relationships, because it becomes so all-encompassing. I think this is particularly hard for folks who are working in life or death situations, or working for a community in which they just feel incredibly passionate and are trying to protect that community. But what it means is those workers burn out faster because that boundary management is so much harder. And then, you know, I kind of talked about that one before, which is that kind of supply, that balance of how much of this intense work or intense passion do you have versus how much do you need? And for a long time, healthcare was in balance. The amount of meaning and purpose they got from their workload was pretty in balance, but the pandemic just really shoved it out of balance. And so you can have a workforce that gets burned out quickly because the balance is out of whack. So those are, you know, there's several paradoxes. That's an example of three of them.
Sure. And you know, I guess a similar line of thought here, but along with paradoxes, myths. I think there are some things that people believe about this kind of stuff that's not necessarily true and might not be helpful as they're looking to rediscover what they do or why they do what they do. What are some of the myths that people believe about purpose?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. I think a common one is that purpose it's only really purpose if it's about a worthy cause, something that other people see is, you know, is defined as a worthy cause or serious in some way. And that's not true. You can find deep purpose and meaning in and be of great service to others doing all kinds of work. So there's no like one right job or one right cause or only some work generates purpose. It's really up to how it feels for that person. So that's kind of one collection of myths. Another one is that you're going to be struck by a bolt of lightning and have this sudden epiphany and know what your purpose is. And that happens to a few people, but most of us, it's a lifetime of unfolding moments, right? So we'll get a clue of something, we'll try it, we'll play with it, then we'll nudge in a different direction, And then sometimes that's a complete no. So we start something completely fresh. It really is a lifetime of exploration. Some people find it early and often, and then just everything's a flavor of that. And other people have really big shifts over their lifetime. So I think it's kind of this myth of you're going to have a sudden revelation, and B, the path is going to be really clear and straightforward. It's not. It's going to be all over the place, and that's normal. Another one would be that once you find it, it's going to carry you forward always. And that's not true either, because who we are as people and what we find meaningful changes over our lifetime, sometimes because positive things happen and sometimes because really horrible things happen. A lot of people who find purpose, it comes out of a tragedy. And it wasn't their purpose before. So in my book, I actually have stories. There's 26 different stories submitted by people around their own journey. One of them was a young gentleman who was, you know, had found his purpose. He was going to be in construction. He was super excited. And then he was in a motorcycle accident and became paralyzed. Mm. And that just changed his whole life. But he was really helped by other folks who'd been paralyzed who mentored him. And that now has become his purpose. His full-time work now is being the person who greets you in the hospital after you've been told you're never going to walk again and is there to say, your life isn't over. Let's work on what it's going to look like now. And so that's what he does. He mentors other people who are going through this. See a lot of things with folks who've lost someone in a mass shooting. They get very passionate around a sense of purpose around gun regulation. So there's lots of myths about purpose. I think the most thing is knowing that as long as you keep engaging in the question, you'll find it. But it doesn't always happen with rainbows and sunshine overnight.
But it's almost like it has to be. I mean, you know, setting aside obviously the examples that you gave about people changed by tragedy are hugely powerful and may not apply to everybody. But at the same time, your point about our purpose changing over time, I think rings true for most people. And it almost sounds like it's there has to be a really intentional kind of ongoing, I don't know if you call it a conversation, but we just need to be sure that over time we're stopping and reconnecting to find out if any of that has changed and if that might change our direction going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like to remind everyone that we are born with this incredible tool inside of us called emotions. Mm-hmm. And your emotions are actually a good compass. You know, now we all have bad days, right? We can even have a bad quarter, a bad year. But generally, you know, if you're on purpose, you're going to feel happiness. You're going to feel fulfillment. You're going to feel a deeper sense of satisfaction. And when you're off purpose, you feel it. You feel like something's not right. You feel disconnected. You might feel depressed. You might feel frustrated. So try things and see what your internal barometer tells you or your internal compass tells you about. Is this a good match? Are you headed in the right direction? Is this way off base? You know, that's the good news is that when we're off track, we kind of keep getting nudged, you know, mm-hmm. Our feelings keep telling us, this just isn't right. Now, some of us will stay in a situation and try to make it work. And we're going to make this work. Right. That was one of my mistakes was I was not taking the hints from the universe. And I would really try to make things happen. And sometimes I just needed to kind of step back and go, hey, the reality is it's not happening. So what do I want to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some great points you've been making throughout here about maybe first steps that we individually can do to reconnect with our whys. How about the people that we work with or for? I think you briefly alluded to managers earlier and some of the work that they might do. What can managers do to kind of help their employees down this path of rediscovering their why?
That's a great question. I have the whole last part of the book is kind of strategies for different folks. You know, if you're a job seeker, how to find the right place to be and find the right job. I've got one for managers and one for leaders. So in the manager category, you know, you're in this role where you're kind of that mediator between the senior leaders and how the organization is, and then the day-to-day work of your employees. And so it's a very powerful position. You have a lot of influence and can do a lot of things. some things, it'll be made better if the leaders above you are doing their part. But if not, you know, one is really focusing on communicating the organization's purpose, the good it does, find those customer stories, find those examples of the change that is happening because of the work the organization does. Another part of that is really connecting that to the jobs of the people that directly report to you. Like that janitor may not see that the time they spent scrubbing that room has a direct benefit on how quickly people heal or how safe that person is, but a manager could help them see that, right? A leader could help them see that. I think it's also really important to get to know your people and ask questions like, what do you find meaningful? What gives you a sense of purpose? Because if you ask those questions, you'll start to go, oh gosh, if I made just a small tweak to Bob's job, he'd be happier. And gosh, if I swap something that Maria and Sam are doing, they'll both be more satisfied. So don't shy away from these questions. These are great questions to ask people. Another thing is, you know, team building. A big portion of what makes jobs feel meaningful is the connections we have to coworkers. And when you're part of a good team and everyone likes and respects each other, you have this thing called psychological safety. People actually really enjoy the camaraderie of the job, and that's what's making it meaningful. To the same vein, if you've got some toxic coworkers or some really unsafe feelings in that environment, doesn't matter how great the job itself is, it's not going to feel good. So I think making sure that you're building psychological safety and you're giving your folks lots of opportunities to connect with each other on a personal level, you're doing fun things together. This can still happen in a hybrid world. Those are all great strategies that managers can use too.
Yeah. And a lot of organizations, I think as a whole, they talk a good game about living their purpose, their values, and significantly fewer of them actually kind of walk that talk. What are some of the, I don't know if you've seen any of the research around this, but what are some of the benefits for organizations that are intentional about this and really get it right?
The benefits are really clear, and I talk about it a lot in the book. I mean, everything from stock performance, significantly higher for purpose-driven organizations, productivity, innovation, significantly higher, retention of your best people, significantly better. There's lots of benefits, even healthcare costs. So when your workforce is feeling like they're living their purpose through work, healthcare costs go way down because people then aren't dealing with all the stress and the anxiety and all the damage that does. What I thought was really interesting in the pandemic is it kind of laid bare, and I've been in Silicon Valley where there's a lot of competition for talent. And so a lot of the ways some of those companies approached kind of competing with each other was what I called the free food and fun furniture. You know, you'd walk into these places and they would have just amazing, you know, foosball tables around every corner, free snacks, free on-site gourmet meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. Buses with Wi-Fi to get you to and from. I mean, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. I mean, those things can make people's lives better. But what happened in the pandemic, everyone had to work from home and no one got access to the free food and the fun furniture anymore. Mm-hmm. And it really laid bare whether organizations had real cultures based on respect and psychological safety and caring for each other, or gosh, they'd only invested in the stuff that people know.
It was just the foosball, right?
Yeah. It was just the foosball. And and so some companies, you know, the ones who had already invested in building a great environment for their people emotionally in relationships, they did much better in the pandemic and through the Great Resignation than those who didn't. So we've already seen some data about that. The other data point that I would highlight is today's workers are savvy. And one of the most damaging things you can do is not address hypocrisy. So if you've got these beautiful values on the wall, or you talk this great game about your vision and mission, but that's not what's really going on every day, people can see it. And so hypocrisy is the most damaging of all. So one of the things I say to leaders is you got to get really focused on sniffing out and addressing where you're out of alignment, because that the amount that you're out of alignment and the length of time you let it keep going is just undermining your credibility and your trust. Yeah. And so this is where I say, you know, organizations know who their toxic managers are. They've already seen it in the engagement scores. They've already seen it in the exit interviews, but sometimes they're not taking action, right? They're not addressing it. And the longer, you know, or a company that says we're super green and yet everybody knows that they're not in the background, today's generation of workers is not gonna stay, and they may not even apply and accept a job in the first place.
Right, right. Very broad question here, but what does the future of work look like to you? As you think about where we've shifted in a ton of ways since the pandemic, and maybe shifted back in other ways, and now things are evolving again. I mean, 5-10 years down the road, what do you see?
I'm actually very, very excited and hopeful for the future. You know, before the pandemic, we already saw that kind of a focus on purpose and meaningful work was on the rise. It was something that the younger generations were wanting. And just to put a point on this, millennials are going to be 75% of the workforce by 2025. Yeah. And they care deeply about this, as does Gen Z, who started to enter the workforce. And then Gen Alpha, any the 0 to 10-year-olds, they're just a whole nother breed altogether. One in five of them has already participated in a protest, and they are not putting up with, you know, they care very much about a connected community and equality in the environment. So if you're ignoring those things, you are not going to have workers in the future. So purpose and meaningful work was already on the rise. And then those folks who study human consciousness has also been on the rise. And as we go through these levels, scientists label them in colors, we get more and more connected. We see that we're all impacted by each other. We're actually all connected. So damage that's done in one area impacts all of us. So those two things were already happening. The pandemic just took it and kind of accelerated it. And people are forever changed, you know, and the struggle we see right now is leaders who are trying to force people back to how it was before. Mm-hmm. We can't go back. We are different. We are different people. And so the leaders that are embracing, we are moving in a direction. It's really now about moving into this purpose economy, something that Aaron Hirsch talks about in his research. And it's only going to get accelerated by AI and ChatGPT and some of these tools, because they're going to continue to shift how we define work. You know, if tasks are being taken on by AI, then it's going to free up human time to do other things. And we may not have 40-hour work weeks, and we may be able to spend a lot more of our time and energy focusing on connection and purpose and meaning. That's the direction that we're going to go. So I think we're really on the cusp of great things and a much more positive future, but it's going to get a little messy here for the next few years, especially as folks who are very attached to the old way resist and struggle and battle, but they'll lose in the end. I'm confident about that. It's just my message to leaders is embrace this new world, completely rethink about how we define work, what it looks like, where it's done and by whom, and start to create space for much more positive things that can come out of people getting to really focus on the good of humanity and the betterment of the planet.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be interesting and like you said, messy, and I think exciting too. It's amazing times that we're living in. It's going to be fun to see where all this goes, I guess, depending on how you define fun. But Britt, thank you so much for your time and your insights. As always, great conversation. Congratulations again on the book, and thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill, and lovely to connect with all your listeners. If they want to follow me, I'm on LinkedIn, and my website is my name, brittandriotta.com.
Wonderful. Thanks again. Great conversation there with Dr. Britt Andriotta. Her latest book is titled Wired to Become: The Brain Science of Finding Your Purpose, Creating Meaningful Work, and Achieving Your Potential. So much good stuff there that's particularly relevant to CPAs today. You can find out more by visiting brittandriotta.com. That is BRITTANDRIATTA.com. Links to all of Britt's social channels and other resources are in our show notes. That's on our website, macpa.org/blog. And don't forget, this week's show is made possible by our preferred providers, our partners in this profession. They're doing things we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And you'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org/showcase. And that is all I've got for you, gang. Thanks for being here. Have a great week. See you again next week.